I'm David W. Berner, and this is The Writer Shed. It is a breezy, wonderful morning here in Chicago, and we deserve this after so many days of rain in this area of the world. The Midwest has had a rainy spring. The dogs have been out today, our dog out sniffing everything possible in the yard, people pushing strollers down the street, one of those days that enlivens one's senses. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. As you know, if you've been a regular listener to the podcast, we are championing the creative process here. But today, we're going to consider not doing that, not taking part in the creative process. So what I mean by that? Well, Medium author and writing coach Akshay Gajria recently wrote a piece that for all intents and purposes suggests one should not write a book. I found that interesting, intriguing, and I wondered what he really meant by that. What was his goal for this statement? And what was his goal for this piece that he wrote? So I asked him to join me on the podcast. Well, it's wonderful to have you here. It's in the evening there in India, right? Am I correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's bright and early morning here. Well, not early morning, but 9 o'clock or so in the Central America. But I appreciate you getting together to do this because I was intrigued by your Medium article. You have a publication on the platform Medium, and I was intrigued by your article as a writing coach, which you are. You are basically telling people not to write, which I found interesting. I mean, I know why you're doing it, I think, but maybe you can explain that. What was the purpose of that article?
I think it was a accumulation of a lot of things that were happening concurrently in my life. I was coaching a few people who did not realize the task that they were undertaking. Like, my article is not about not writing per se, but it's more about not writing a book. Because a lot of young writers, they all start off with this spunky energy that, oh, I'm going to write a book. And I was the same when I started off, when I wanted to write. Like, I wanted to write a book. That's what a writer is, right? But once you sort of dive into the industry, you sort of understand that there is a plethora of things that need to be written. It's not just a book. A book takes a while to grow and become, and everybody is looking for that quick hit that, oh, I will be a writer only if I write a book. But you can be a writer by writing a lot of smaller things, and it's like one day waking up thinking that, hey, I want to be a bodybuilder, and next day going to the gym and pumping up and thinking, oh, why don't I have muscles, right? It's the same thing. You need to keep at it, slowly grow, slowly become a writer, slowly grow your craft, and then finally, once you look back, you see that, hey, I have written so much, maybe I can either compile all of it into a form of a book, or maybe write something new, because I know that I can consistently keep writing.
Yeah, I think you're saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it basically says that people don't understand the creative process as a writer. Like, they really don't understand it. It's not like I'm trying to think of another work of art or another, like, playing music, not necessarily writing music, but playing music. You go to a club, you play 3 or 4 songs on a stage, and you're done, and you've done your work, and it's done. But this is not that process, right?
Yeah, I think also writing as a process, the grunt work of writing is never portrayed in any medium before. Like, nobody really talks about the amount of time or amount of work, but it's a very boring process where the writer is sitting on the desk and writing, right? Nobody portrays it. Even in videos or movies, when you're showcasing what writers do, it is all time-lapse, because you can't see they're having, showing every word being written, right? So I made this mistake recently, and So I'm learning how to cook recently, and I was watching a lot of videos, and there was a video where something had to be mashed, and it was all time lapse. You just had to mash it. And when I actually went around to mashing it, I realized how much time and effort it actually takes to do it by hand.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, oh, it should be done in a minute, but it was taking me a good long 10 minutes to do. So writing is sort of the same. You don't see that process. It's always time lapse, and people think, oh, I'm just going to write. but that's not how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, we hear about, like, when you read about famous authors, new and old, you know, they think it's a good day when they've written 500 words.
Yes.
You know, and I think that some people need to hear that more often. You know, it took me all day to write a good 500 words. Now, there are other writers that are very different in their approach, but you hear that a lot. And, you know, that might be something, I don't know, what do you think? That might be something that people should hear more.
Yeah. That writing a good 500 words is so much difficult, and it only comes after you've written at least 3,000 words of really horrible stuff to get 500 words that are good. And people don't realize that behind those good 500 words, there are tons of words that have just either not been used or never will be used. And to develop all of that as well takes time and effort, which nobody really talks about.
Now, what's the famous line from Hemingway, that the first draft of anything is shit?
I completely agree. The first draft, so I tell all my clients this, that, hey, you're writing the first draft, its job is to be shit. If you think it's good, that means you've done a bad job. It's not right. It has to be bad.
Yeah. So what, on that vein, to write an article like that, so what do you suggest? What do you tell people as a writing coach how to work through that process?
Yeah, I tell most of my clients that you should be writing smaller things. Practice writing smaller things. First task is to create a discipline of writing every day, like, unless and until you don't understand that, oh, a big piece of writing is not written in one sitting. It needs multiple days. And once you sort of start to build on that, then the snowball really starts to move and you see it becoming larger and larger and larger. And once you have a big chunky piece, that is when you go to work on it, right? So that first draft, it's not going to be neat. It's not going to be clean. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be all over the place, but that's fine. That's when you start to sculpt. Like I usually talk about it as a sandbox. So first draft is you just shoveling sand into a box. And once you have all the sand, that's when you start to shape sandcastle out of it. So until unless you don't have the sand, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah, but I've heard other people say, you know, to think of it as a big ball of clay. And that you just got all the clay now, and now you need to, like, shape that thing into something that's beautiful. Right.
Yeah.
It's hard work. I mean, I don't want to liken it to digging a ditch or liken it to some really difficult manual labor, but it is a process that is easy. It looks easier than it is.
Yeah.
Right. Do you get that from people that you coach, that they see it as something that can be done in a couple of months? And look, we all know there have been writers who have written wonderful books in a couple of months, but that's a little unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe there are two things to this answer. One is that a lot of people believe that it can be written in a couple of months. It's not a hard job. One of the reasons that prompted me to write this article was because I started to get these ads all over the internet. I don't know, internet has profiled me as an author. It's something that I think, but write a book in 30 days. Write, publish, and market your book in 30 days. And I just started losing my mind reading those. You can't write a book in 30 days. Who is selling you this crap?
Yeah, you know what? There's something on, I think it's Instagram right now. It's probably in different platforms. There's a guy, and I hate to call him out. I don't know his name, so I won't do that. But I think you know who I mean. There's a guy who gets on there and says, I can have you write a book in a week or 2 weeks and be the bestseller. And I'm like, and he calls it a nonfiction book. So I don't really know what he's talking about, if he's talking about self-help or how-to books or whatever he's talking about. But I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, that just seems ludicrous to me.
Yeah.
He's selling dreams. Aren't they selling dreams?
it is a fantasy that they're selling. Like, dreams are still achievable if you work on it, but this is complete and utter fantasy. Like, I'm not denying that you can't write a book in 30 days. You definitely can, but I can't guarantee its quality, because you know, it'll probably just be your first draft that you put out there, and it's not going to be good. So why would you attach your name to something like that?
When you're working with your clients or people that you're working with, and you say write small, and I think when I do workshops, I always tell people to write a scene. Don't worry about where it's going or where it fits in. Just write a scene, right? It can be short, long, whatever, but just write a scene. But then what do you do with it? I know what I tell my people in my workshops, but I wonder what you do when you tell people that want to write something long form and you say to them, let's write small first. Then what happens in your mind?
I ask them to write another piece and then another, because once you start seeing the things that are written down and you start experimenting with ideas, poking them from different directions, that's when you start to understand most of the people who come to me are story writers, who want to write a novel or who wants to write something fictional. So I always keep asking them to keep writing different kind of stories so that they can stretch that muscle and understand how the story can be structured, how it all fits into place together. And once they sort of start to understand how it flows, that's when you start to, you know, take on bigger challenges. Like, first just write about one small character in a small place, grow from that to bring in another character, then grow from that to bring in another character and see how all of it mingles and fits into place.
It's kind of like you've got the puzzle pieces all in front of you, right? But you have no idea where those pieces go just yet, but the pieces are all there. So now, then you just, whether they've been written or if they're in your head, they're formalized somehow. And then you figure out, okay, how do I put this together so that the puzzle makes sense? And sometimes the theme will come too. Like, people really, you know, especially in memoir, people don't always know exactly what their theme is or what their focus is. But as they write different pieces of their story, the theme starts to like shape. It kind of comes to the top like cream.
It bursts out once you start writing it. Like, once you put all the pieces together, once you have all the dots in the page, that's when you can start to see the shape and connect the dots together. I think in Stephen King's book on writing, he mentions that how once he has the draft and when he's revising it, that's when the theme and what the book is really about starts to emerge. And then you sort of, you don't have to shape all the things according to the theme, but you start to see how certain pieces go beyond the theme and they can be cut off. And that's part of the editing process, right? So, but unless you don't have that first structure beneath, how are you going to be pulling out a theme from it?
Other than what we've been talking about here, the fact that people not completely understanding what the process is or what it takes or the kind of mental sort of, I don't want to say anguish, but certainly mental work that needs to be done. Yeah. What else do people not understand from your perspective?
Time.
Time.
The time it requires you to spend with your book, I think. Because it affects your entire daily life in some ways, because when I am working on a book, I know that I don't have the time to be spending with maybe some friends, some family. All of it starts to get affected because you are in the depth with your book. It's just you and the book. It's like when you are starting a new relationship, you don't think about anything else other than you and the other person, right? So it should be the same affair that you're having with your book, and everything else falls apart. This, I think, is one very big hurdle for a lot of people to cross, because it does affect your relationships. It does affect all the people around you. Like, I believe I read an article about a writer who had gone to a cabin to write for a few days not a few days, like a 30-day period when she wrote her entire first draft, and her mother was living with her in that cabin. And it affected her mother so much more than the writer. Because she could not connect to her daughter, because her daughter was just engrossed in the book and nothing else. You know, so the people around you get affected so much. And this, I think, turns a lot of people off writing, or especially writing. Because you can write an article or you can write a 2,000 word something and have it done in a week. Maybe you can do it in 2 weeks, and it doesn't really affect your relationships. It doesn't affect your personal life. But writing a book requires so much time and energy that it will affect everything else.
That's a really good perspective on it, because I do think that there's, you know, maybe this is hyperbole, but there is sort of collateral damage when you're when you're working on some big project. And also, you know this, I mean, I think most writers and people who do this on a regular basis know this, especially when you're working on something long form, that it's with you all the time.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're what, taking the dog for a walk, you're driving to the grocery store, you're thinking about a character or what they're going to, it's kind of screwed up.
I have started to meet a lot of new people, and I warn them that whatever you say or do may be taken and used by me, because I'm constantly observing them, seeing, do they do things like my characters do? Do they have certain mannerisms that I can use for my future characters? It's a always on sort of a switch, the machine in my head that I can't switch off. And I think true for all writers.
I tell people too, and see what you think about this. I tell people too to spend some time just watching people and listening. You know, I used to do this workshop for my students sometimes when they would take the elevator. I would tell them to take the elevator up and down. This is pre-COVID. Now it's a little different maybe, but take the elevator down and, you know, just take it up and down. And when two people get in and start to talk, they're probably somewhere in the middle of a conversation, and you don't know what the context is, but you just hear their dialogue. Bring that back and try to make something out of that dialogue you just heard. You know, because first of all, you're hearing what real people talk like, and then you're also trying to create a story and create characters and create some sort of a moment in time through just the dialogue that you heard. So I don't know what, it seemed to work for students. It made them think imaginatively and not just take things for face value. It's kind of a long-winded statement there, but I ask people to pay attention to the world around them, because there's pieces of your story are right in front of you.
Yeah. The stories will always continue to reflect the real world. That is where the stories really come from. And they're just shaped differently by us. But it's the world where we get the stories from. And yeah, definitely, I tell all my students, maybe this is not the most legal advice to give, but I always tell them, eavesdrop on people as much as possible. It's not about what they are saying usually, it's about how they are saying it. And you know, constantly observe this. I usually tell them this when we are working with dialogues, because it's so important. It's so difficult to capture good dialogue the way we actually speak. And just listening to so many people converse and talk, and it's again, it's not about what they're saying, it's how they're saying it, what are the pronunciations, how do they make it. And that's where you get most of your ideas, that hey, some person just talks very softly and someone is just loud and assertive, right?
Right.
So much comes from there.
So eavesdropping. Don't think that's, if certainly if you're in a public place, that's not an illegal thing. The last thing I want to bring up is, what do you tell clients about the publishing world right now? What do you tell them? You know, there's a difference between writers who love to write and want to write a story, and then people who just want to get published. Yeah. They're kind of like two different kinds of people, right?
Yes.
So what do you tell them?
I tell them the truth. That I lay down all the options for them because times are changing, publishing industry is also changing. But I tell them that, hey, look, you will write a book. It will take time. But to publish a book also takes time. It's not going to happen like, oh, you got a publisher and it's published. There is a process of first querying, getting a publisher. That in itself is the taxing process. Once you are through that, then at least it'll take at least 6 to 8 months, maybe a year for the book to be published. So you give them the true estimate, but also tell them that, hey, if you're just looking to get published, you can just pay money and get published as a self-published author as well. There are various methods to go about that. But then I also give them the pros and cons for each. Like self-publishing, yes, it's quick. You are in control. You get all the, the monetary benefits. But there may or may not be the professional level of editing that goes into the book. You have to hire the editor. You not only are you in control of the entire process, but all the mistakes that you make are also yours.
Yeah.
But when you go through a traditional publisher, there is a high chance that most of those mistakes may be rectified, right? It goes through a very meticulous process within them. And you also get the backing of their distribution network. With self-publishing, you have to create your own distribution network.
Right.
It's not cut and dry, right? So I lay down all the options for them. And I tell them that at the end, the decision is yours. It's not, I won't push you towards any one direction. It is whatever your purpose is. If you think, oh, I can distribute it, I have enough people, or I just want to publish this for my friends or family, then go for publishing. You don't need to go through the entire harrowing process of, getting published through a traditional publisher. But if you are looking to do that, then be my guest, but be prepared that it is a longer and as difficult as writing a book process in there as well.
Yeah, I always tell people that it's the good news is that there are a lot of opportunities out there to publish. The bad news is there are a lot of opportunities out there to publish.
Totally.
You gotta be careful. Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I really appreciate you bringing your thoughts to the podcast. Ash K, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I wish you a lot of luck with your clients. And I know you're really not telling people not to write, just people that you're telling people to know what they're getting into.
Exactly. That's all I'm telling them.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, David. This was so much fun.
You can find Akshay and his writing on Medium and at his website, akshaygajria.com. One more note on the podcast today. Sandman, my novella, is out this month, officially. A tale of a young boy and his mystical connection to a homeless man all through the game of golf. It's from Round Fire Books, and I'm real proud of the story, and I hope you get a chance to take a look at it. Sandman, a golf tale. This has been episode 35 of The Writer Shed. I'm David W. Berner. Our music is from iRay Music Production, and interviews, as always, produced right here in the Shed. You can find out more about Writer Shed at Writer Shed on Medium. You can also sign up for our newsletter there and find us at Writer Shed Press on Twitter. The Writer Shed, available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.